Contest of Champions, episode number 37, Iron Fist and Mandarin versus Iceman.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Welcome back, comic book fans, to season number 2 of the Contest of Champions Live, the premier comic book podcast on the internet today. This is the 17th fight of season 2 and the 37th episode under our belts since we have gone live. But we wouldn't be the best comic book podcast on the net if not for our dedicated listeners and reliable competitors. So a big shout out to all our supporters.
All right. Thanks, Eli. The ever unreliable clobbering clergyman, Jeff Jackson, is off again this week. You'd think a guy who only works one day a week wouldn't need vacation time, but, you know, I don't know. What are you going to do? filling his vacant shoes is resident COC All-Star, Eli Anthony. How are you doing, Eli?
Doing great, Ian.
Oh, I'm going to change my mic here. And as always, myself, the Canadian Cape Killer, joining us this week, the second toughest guy on the COC crew, Infinite Speech.
Hey, how you guys doing?
under the weather, Infinite Speech.
Yes.
That's too bad. Summer colds suck. And the guy that the Crimson Corsair story in The Watchmen was based on, Tom McNeely. So, hey, Speech, sorry about the Watchmen. Sorry, go ahead, Tom.
I was just saying hi.
Oh, sorry about the Watchmen reference there, Speech. I know you haven't read the book.
True, true, true. But I actually started. I'm on page 3.
Oh, good. Look at you. So everyone's good? Everyone's good today?
Aside from the little crappy summer cold I have, I'm great, actually.
Yeah? Doing good here?
All right, good, good. In the spirit of Canada Day and the fact that Jeff isn't around to stop me, I decided to load up. I decided to load up on some Canadiana comic facts instead of the news today. So I'm going to start us off with a little musical interlude, and then I'm going to give you some Canadian comic facts. There we go. Yeah, that was courtesy of Classified, great Canadian rapper. Love him. So fact number one, did you know that 2 of the Alpha Flight members defeated Galactus once? Did you guys know that?
Which 2? Songbird and Shaman?
No. It was in Alpha Flight number 100, and it was Vindicator and Guardian, and they both together took down Galactus.
He must have had the same crappy summer cold I had.
Something had to be up with that.
Tough as nails. Did you know that Walter Lankowski, otherwise known as Sasquatch, actually played football for the Green Bay Packers? A little bit of Sasquatch backstory.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, me neither. Sorry, I'm just taking a drink. fact number 3, and this would be a question for you guys. Which member of Alpha Flight once killed Spider-Man?
Ooh, was it Puck?
Was not Puck.
I think Puck could do it.
Oh, Puck could kill anybody.
Box?
Nope. Tom, you want to take a shot?
Let me think.
I'll give you a hint.
Wasn't Marina, was it?
No, good guess. It was Diamond Lil.
Oh, okay.
Diamond Lil. And what happened was they were transported. The whole team was transported to an alternative reality. And Diamond Lil got into a brawl with that dimension Spider-Man and beat him to a pulp and ended up crushing his skull into a brick wall and killing that planet Spider-Man.
Somebody was a little PO'd that day.
Very cool. Very cool. So, so those are my 3 Canadiana facts, which just show that Canadians are obviously the toughest people on the planet.
I tell you, that those are way more impressive than I thought this was going to be when you first started.
Yeah.
Good job.
Thanks. All right. Are you ready for the Lost Voice, Eli?
Do it.
Previously on COC.
All right. So last week we saw Nightcrawler, managed by Daniel Briand, versus Invisible Woman, managed by myself, Eli Anthony, in Doctor Strange's Sanctum Sanctorum. This was a strongly debated fight during the podcast and on the forums. Check out all the back and forth comments regarding this fight on the comicattack.forumer.com website under the forum titled COC.
Good. So the Comic Attack poll named Invisible Woman as the winner. They said 71% of the people that voted picked Invisible Woman over the 29% that voted for Age of Apocalypse Nightcrawler. So according to the poll, that's Invisible Woman. And if you give me 1 second, the ever negligent Jeff Jackson did send me who he picked on email. I should have had it up ready, but I forgot. Give me 1 second. Like, I know who he picked, but he had a little rationale he wanted me to read.
He wanted to back up his reasoning.
I'm sure we all know who he picked, of course.
It's funny, eh? The guy takes the day off, and then he's sending all this stuff that he wants me to do on the show.
Wants you to work on his day off, and it's your holiday.
Yeah. No, he gave me some things to do in the news. Yeah, we scrapped that. He gave me some questions. No, thanks. So I'll... I love when he's not here. but I will read his rationale for who he picks. So he says... So this is him word for word. These guys like to talk about what these characters have the power to do, but they don't take into account what these characters would actually do. Sure, Sue could put a bubble in Kurt's head, and that's it. But that's not what she would do. Here's how I see the fight going down. Both of these characters are invisible to one another. Sue sticks to invisibility. Kurt sticks to the shadows. But even if Sue is invisible, she still casts a shadow. I see Kurt... But even if Sue is invisible, she casts a shadow?
That doesn't make sense.
What's he talking about?
He's out of his mind.
Pay attention in school.
Wow. Okay, well...
Yeah, Sue doesn't cast a shadow when she's invisible.
Hey, again, listeners, I'm just reading Jeff Jackson's stuff here.
The Georgia public school system did well by you, Tom, but Jeff... I
went to the South Carolina school system.
Oh, that's loves it then.
They skipped the unit on light and refraction and stuff like that. Okay, yeah, so I'm just reading Jeff's stuff. This does not reflect me. Please don't judge me. I see Kurt patiently waiting for Sue in a rafter. Once Sue walks past that fire in the fireplace, Kurt can see her, and bamf, he's on top of her. Sorry, you guys are going to probably start to hear lots of fireworks in the background now, too, because it's Canada Day. She hears the bamf and immediately puts up a force field, dropping her own invisibility. Kurt's sword hits the force field, and frustrated, he teleports back to rethink his attack. Sue strikes with a huge force field blast, which connects, but not lethally. A trickle of blood drips down Kurt's chin. He immediately bamfs around, trying to confuse Sue. In defense, she throws up a force field again. Kurt sees her and teleports right up against her body inside the force field. Man, he's all over the place with this whole thing with Sue and Nightcrawler, right? Pressed against her, he wraps his arms around her. It's like I'm reading another... It's like I'm reading something out of Playboy or something. He wraps his arms around her, lays a wet, fuzzy kiss on her mouth.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God. Surprising her enough that he begins to jaunt her around the room.
That's what they're calling it nowadays.
Oh, Lord. The multiple teleporting weakens her and disorients her. She lies on the ground, weak, barely moving, but conscious. Kurt raises his sword to offer the killing blow. This is really good. Kurt raises his sword to offer the killing blow. when he feels something in his stomach, an expansive force bubble has formed inside of him. Oh. Here's Jeff now. Did you see that?
He feels it swelling.
Sue begins to get up while Kurt falls to his knees. The pain of the expanding bubble is too great, and Kurt passes out.
Oh, I need wrong with that.
Yeah, I need to go take a cold shower.
Once that Sue,
I appreciate the vote, Jeff, but that's way too dirty with my lady, man.
Once Sue realizes that this Kurt would likely go to further lengths to harm or kill her, she becomes less restrained and would subdue him with an internal force bubble. Winner, Sue. So Jeff, with a long pornographic rationale, he picks Sue.
Nice job, clergyman.
Because she could cast a shadow while invisible.
Yeah, that's her new power.
And Nightcrawler is going to kiss her on the lips? He's kissing her?
Yeah,
I think he has this Nightcrawler confused with the 616 Kurt who's dead.
Yeah, I don't see this guy's being very romantic.
Yeah, I don't think.
Yeah, 616 Kurt is all playful and would, you know, throw a kiss, say a witty phrase, but this one is all about the fight.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so that's the poll for Invisible Woman. Jeff for Invisible Woman, and I also pick Invisible Woman. I think that I'm not, of all the reading that I've done with the Age of Apocalypse Nightcrawler, I'm not that convinced that he's all that tough. I mean, don't get me wrong, he's tough, whatever. But what I was thinking of myself was I was looking at how would Age of Apocalypse Nightcrawler do against the 616 Nightcrawler, who's now dead. And if those two were in a fight and I was voting, I would actually vote for the 616 Nightcrawler to win, which I know sounds kind of weird. But I see the Age of Apocalypse one as he's a little reckless. He's just a little angry. He's not, I don't know, he's just not X-Men material yet. Now, they might develop the character and change that and make him into that kind of character. But for now, I don't see him as having anywhere near the stuff needed to take down the Invisible Woman. So I think in the Sanctum Sanctorum, I think he has some advantages, you know what I mean? But it is just a house, like might be a mansion and it's large and all, but I think Invisible Woman's power is just, it's just too strong. Ultimately, I don't see how he could hurt her with her force power. So that's a sweep for Invisible Woman. She moves on to the next round, and unfortunately, Age of Apocalypse Nightcrawler is out.
Thanks, guys. Sorry, Dan. To learn more about the COC, go back and listen to the live draft or episodes 1 through 16 by going to comicattack.forumer.com and look it up in the forum appropriately titled COC.
Good. Tonight's question of the week. Well, there is no question of the week tonight, so we'll skip the question of the week section. Jeff wanted me to go and check the forum over at comicrelated.com, but I'm just too stupid to figure out where that might be. So, like, I went over to the website and went on to their forum, but I couldn't find anything COC specific in the forum. You know, so, like, I could find where our podcasts are and stuff, but in terms of a forum, I don't know what he was referring to. So hopefully there's not a question there that I'm just ignoring. And if there is a question there, I'm not ignoring your question. We'll get to it next week once Jeff tells me how to find it. Sorry, guys.
So, in the spirit of superheroes fighting superheroes, it is tradition here on the show for all the participants, Ian and myself, to choose one fight from this week's comics that we consider to be the highlight fight of the week.
Good. Eli, did you want to go first?
Sure. So, my fight, it's kind of a flashback. Batman Incorporated number 2. There's a flashback in that issue to a fight that Batman and Ra's al Ghul had in Batman, originally fought in Batman number 244, which is from, I don't know, early 70s, I think. And it's pretty awesome. The Talia al Ghul factors in a bit. They're in the desert, and Bruce is fighting him. He's lost his cape and everything. He's just got his cowl. They're sword fighting, and it's pretty intense. And Batman seemingly goes down and is seemingly dead as far as Ra's is concerned. And Ra's goes on about his business. He's in a you know, later on he's chilling in a tent, in his tent, thinking Batman's done for, and Batman just shows up, goes in the tent, and I believe Ra's line is, you are a fiend from hell, you pursue me beyond your dying, and he's actually scared, and Bruce just owns him, you know, he gets a drop on him and he terrifies him by continuing to pursue him even though he had nothing and he was left for dead in the desert. And, you know, so it's like a classic battle between those two. And it may be, I could be mistaken, but I think it may be their first real battle. So that one really set the stage for the history to come. And yes, that is a flashback that is in the it's from Batman Incorporated number 2. So, you know, it goes way back before 5 years of continuity or whatever they got going on with the New 52 continuity in history, but there it is.
It seems like they're most willing to break the rules with that, with Batman, don't you find?
Yeah.
Like, it seems like Batman's the one of the exceptions to this whole reboot. Like, not that he's not a reboot, but every little once in a while, it looks like they're sneaking some past continuity stuff into there.
Well, and aside from the late 40s and 50s and some of that 60s garbage that, you know, Batman's got the most awesome history.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, if they were going to break the rules, do it for him and Animal Man, of course, you know.
Animal Man, yeah.
Well, didn't they also keep most of Green Lantern's history intact as well?
Yeah, Green Lantern is pretty much unaffected. But then, yeah, on the other hand, Firestorm is completely redone. So, and Catwoman is completely redone.
Ah, Firestorm. That title sucked real quick.
All right. Sorry, I was talking to Jeff.
No, he can't. He's not allowed to join in on our reindeer games here since he's off. He can go do whatever fun and frilly thing that he's doing now.
Yeah, I mean, he already messed us up with his softcore porn.
Yeah,
seriously.
There, ask him what was up with that. And golly.
Well, what the heck's going on? So he can't be on the show, but he's trolling us on Skype.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Dude's a weirdo.
Maybe he's creepy, Uncle Jeff.
I can finally get rid of that name.
All right, Tom, did you have a fight for us?
Yeah. Well, this past week I've been working on catching up my Green Hornets. I had a really annoying gap occurred. My dealer didn't ship me like issue 12, and so for the last year or so, it's been basically trying to find one issue that just wouldn't. It just seemed like every comic shop I checked out, it was missing that one issue. There's nothing special about it. It's just one of those that, you know, never shows up. So anyway, I got it a while back and finally got everything together to just catch back up and get current on title. But I really liked the fight in issue 17. And this is what's happening is a mysterious fighter called the Red Hand shows up, and he's basically just keeps popping up, you know, beats the snot out of Green Hornet, it keeps challenging them but disappearing. And Kato has been injured, and this is kind of a lapse in the book, but they in the previous storyline she had been actually beaten and then shot, and they had to rush her to the hospital. She loses her spleen. They, you know, do this emergency surgery, and like a week later she's now just getting up out of bed, although now suddenly they've changed it from being shot to just being under a beating, just getting a bad beating. But anyway, she gets kidnapped by this Red Hand from the hospital room, and she wakes up dressed in her costume and sees on a closed circuit TV that her father, Kato, is tied up and unconscious on top of the building. So she has to make her way up to the roof. On every floor, there's a different set of challenges for her to fight. So the first floor is a bunch of thugs with weapons. Second floor, another set of that's still first floor. But then, it's next floor. It's a hall of mirrors with ninjas coming after her. You know, so each floor she's having to fight a different challenge, and each one each challenge wears her down a little bit more or a little bit more until she finally makes it to the roof, kind of on her last legs, gets to her father, and then it turns out it's actually the Red Hand in disguise, disguises her father. So he comes out. She manages, but she still manages to fight him off for several minutes. And as we find out in later issues, he finally wins. But as we find out in later issues, this guy is actually trained by Kato. Was actually trained after he had after he and Green Hornet had finished their work. Kato had trained him as kind of his next his legacy, his next generation. But it hadn't worked out. He's kind of the bad seed that, that he had cut off and abandoned. And he was coming back for revenge against Kato through his family and through Milan and through the Green Hornet. So this fight though was really good. Just had Kato kind of showing how badass she is. I really like that. Although it, I was annoyed by the fact her injury suddenly changed from being shot to just being beaten a little bit. But still, even incapacitated, she was able to hold her own through all that.
Cool. Very cool.
Now you make me want to start reading Green Hornet again, because it was good for a while, and then I stopped reading it, and then I never went back.
Yeah,
I think I switched over to year one.
Yeah, I didn't read the year one. The Kevin Smith stuff, that was the thing. It was the second issue after Kevin Smith left the title was the one I missed. So for the last year, I've been getting all the other issues. It's just that one I just haven't been able to acquire, and I finally got it a while back, and then just add insult to injury, then another issue went missing, which I had in my catalog that I did have. I just couldn't find it. It turned out it was in the wrong box. Once I found it, I was able to finally put the whole thing together and read it. So,
yeah, I'm the same. I stopped after Kevin Smith left, and I stopped reading it as well.
It's been pretty decent. There's some funny characters in there. You got their cousin, Kato's cousin, or Mulan. By Kato, I mean Mulan. Kato's the original Kato's daughter, but she has a cousin named Clutch, who's strangely like blonde-haired, blue-eyed guy, but like sort of like a hippie. But he's her tech guy. He does all that. He builds the Black Beauty and the I forget what they call his Green Horse motorcycle, but he does all that. But there's some funny little quirks. Like for example. The Green Hornet's not allowed to drive his own car. He's not allowed to drive the Black Beauty. It won't allow him to drive it. It just says unauthorized user, and it won't do anything. It refuses.
Yeah, I love how they clean that up. I love how they clean that up.
Yeah, it's basically they don't trust him with a car, so they gave him a motorcycle, which he managed to wreck like the first time out. So there's some funny little backstories there, and actually the Red Hand ends up invading the Hornet's lair, and as it comes out, I'll go ahead and spoil it for everybody. As it comes out, Clutch is the one that defeats him, and it's like it turns out it's with some hallucinogenic gas, and it's like, well, why weren't you affected? He's like, lots of experience with mind altering drugs, brah.
That's awesome. Yes, so
it has this moments of humor. I don't think it's as good as when Kevin Smith was writing it, but it's not horrible. Horrible either.
Yeah, I guess.
I think I'll stick with it a little bit longer. I did. I really liked the Kato series. That was pretty good.
Yeah, I didn't check that out. All right, Speech. Do you got a book for us?
Yeah, my fight of the week will be Amazing Spider-Man number 2, and it's not actually a lot like a fight. Peter and Miles met up at the end of issue 1, and issue 2 pretty much has them going at each other, and there it's like a very hilarious sparring match. Did you see, like, I think it started, Peter shot a web at Miles, and Miles, like, did this matrix bend back and, like, dodged it, and he was so happy that he dodged it. Peter comes with, actually it's a capoeira move, and just kicks the crap out of Miles and shoots webs, and they just are going, like, back and forth, and they both have, like, this great witty banter, and then Miles uses that venom sting on Peter and just shocks the hell out of him. And then, you know, he tries to take off Pete's mask, and Pete tosses him, and then he gets nervous because he realizes the kid that he doesn't have webs, so he thinks he's killed him, but Miles is stuck on the side of the building camouflaged, and then he comes by, knocks the mess out of Pete, and then there's this web that's made, and then Peter takes off Miles' mask, and Miles, like, freaks out. You know, he's like, give me my mask back, give it back, and Pete's just talking. So he sends that venom sting throughout the entire web, shocks the hell out of Peter, screws up the web. They both start falling, and Peter's unconscious. And Miles like grabs the web shooter off of his wrist and shoots it and saves them both, and then takes him down to Nick Fury. So it was just a pretty like humorous fight, but it was just great that these two, you know, they met up, and you wouldn't expect them to go at it. You know, it's like, hey, you're Spider-Man, so am I. Let's talk it out, blah blah blah. But it's a humorous little fight that Bendis and Pacelli put together for us. So that's my throwdown of the week.
No, I'm not getting that book speech. How do these guys end up together? What, like, how do they bridge that?
There was, in the first issue, you have the ultimate version of Mysterio is in the 616. We don't know how yet. We don't know how we got there, but there's a portal there. And Peter just thinks he's his Mysterio. They end up fighting, and Pete ends up getting tossed into it. Then he ends up in the Ultimate Verse and bumps into Miles on a rooftop later on.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's very cool.
Freaking out, because in the Ultimate Universe, everyone knows who Spider-Man was. Everyone knows that Peter Parker was Spider-Man.
Yeah.
You know, so he's a little freaked out by the fact that Miles knows who he is. And so did the random bum on the street.
All right, very cool. Yeah, I might have to go back and get those books. My fight of the week comes from, I think it sounds or feels strange this coming out of my lips, but one of the most consistent X-Men books for the past little while, and that's X-Men Legacy. And it's X-Men Legacy number 269. And for me, the fight in there, well, the whole fight in the entire book is just two people. But I was telling Eli before we started the podcast, I never get tired of Rogue and Miss Marvel fighting. I know I should. You know, it should be cliche like a lot of other X-Men things, you know. But I don't know why, but I just don't tire of these two. Like, it's funny. There's a lot of heroes who have a lot of personalized villains. But I think nobody, in my mind, has a right to be more angry with somebody than Miss Marvel does with Rogue, you know, and I really do. I see them as lifelong villains, like lifelong enemies against each other. So it was kind of neat seeing them come together, and I thought it was really well written, where Miss Marvel, she actually was there just to talk to Rogue, but it seemed like a bit of a setup to Rogue. So, you know, she's not waiting for any questions or anything like that, and she happened to have taken a little bit of Iceman's power just before this encounter with Miss Marvel. So as soon as Miss Marvel comes up to her, she forms this massive ice fist, like kind of her entire arm is just one giant block of ice, and just cold cocks Miss Marvel. It's wicked. And she actually does that probably a good 4 or 5 times. Like, you'd think she'd learn, Miss Marvel would learn from the mistake, but she keeps coming back at her, and Rogue just keeps hitting her over the head with a giant block of ice. And then, you know, then Rogue actually does the unthinkable, which, you know, you'd never think she would do, but she goes in and she steals Miss Marvel's power again by touching her face. And you can see the look in Miss Marvel's face, like, you know, you gotta be fucking kidding me. Are you serious? Like, we're doing this again? And then Miss Marvel, of course, loses it a little bit because, well, you know, we all know that history. But like I was saying to Eli before the podcast, it was great because Rogue kind of goes into this little rope-a-dope, like this good old Muhammad Ali rope-a-dope, where Miss Marvel thinks she's getting the better of her. And then basically what happens is Rogue just unleashes on her and pounds the living tar out of Miss Marvel, and then embeds her in a giant block of ice. And unfortunately for Miss Marvel, calls Ileana, who's one of the Phoenix Five, to come and take over and grab her. So, and I think things are going to get nasty from there. But it was a great fight. Went like lasted a good almost like 10 pages worth of nonstop action. So very, very much worthy of fight of the week.
What issue was that again?
That was 269.
Of Legacy?
Legacy, yeah. Really beautiful cover, too.
It's the one I didn't pick up, damn it.
Yeah, it's got a...
I love that, yeah. That Mark title Brooks. Is one of my favorites.
Mark Brooks cover, which is nice. I love Mark Brooks' art. It's a beautiful cover.
But she's like ripping through the page, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it'd make a great poster. Something that I'd love to have on my wall. All right. Well, four good fights of the week. Very interesting.
Those are good ones. So, now it's on to the main event. Woo-hoo. Tonight's fight features the double team of Iron Fist and Mandarin, managed by Infinite Speech, versus Iceman, managed by Tom McNeely, at the Peak Space Station. Let's hear what our managers have to say about this matchup. Listen carefully to the podcast, as all of the voting rules and game information will be listed after the fight.
Everybody loves the Peak Station. Everybody loves the
Peak. This is the most popular environment so far.
Almost every fight has been here.
Yeah, it just won't go away either. We can't. I was looking for new environments. That's why I was late getting my pick in. I always go back and check and see which environments are available. And I chatted with Jeff Wednesday night, and I was like, "Yeah, I'll get you my pick in a second," because I already knew I had this Ned Iceman because it was his turn. But I didn't know which environments were ready, and I thought they might have changed, but they hadn't. So.
Yeah,
the Peak, I think, had some. It was probably the closest thing I could find to an advantage. So.
I used the randomizer, too, to pick which ones are taken out. So the Peak, just for some reason, keeps living on and on.
The Peak is determined.
Yeah, no doubt. All the listeners should recognize, too, that because Jeff bailed on this fight in a big way. Both Speech and Tom, I think it's fair to say you guys were kind of unaware that you guys were going to throw down tonight, right?
Yeah, I just walked into the house from the lake, so I was unpacking gear when you called.
So this is going to be a real shooting from the hip rationale coming from these
pretty
two guys.
Much,
so
pretty much seat of your pants. Because I think I submitted my pick while trying not to pass out at work yesterday.
Nice. Yeah. That's dedication.
There you go.
Yep.
Okay, Gid. So, Gid, you're the way team, so you're going to call it. I've got the Canada Day dime in my hand here. So we've got the queen is heads, and the schooner, which is a boat, is tails. What would you like?
I'm feeling schoonerish.
Okay, the boat. All right. Heads. All right, so Tom, so what do you want? Tom, do you want Speech to start, or you want to start?
I'll let Speech start.
All right. How did I lose the coin toss? That's never a good way to start off the match. It's a bad omen right there. All right. Mandarin and the Iron Fist appear on the station. All right. Now, since, like, we just made the comment that the Peak Station has been used over and over again, I'm pretty sure the Peak... the sword personnel are pretty much worn down and tired of seeing these guys pop in and out. And I'm sure there's pretty a lot of structural damage already to the state station ever since the prison break and the recent issues. So these guys see Iron Fist and Mandarin, but Mandarin quickly, he'll use his the Mento intensifier ring to kind of like calm them down. And he can also use it to make them think that they're just regular sword personnel anyway. Kind of lets them move about the station freely at some points. Iceman's on the other side of the station. They're making their way towards each other. At some point, going to have Mandarin and Iron Fist decide to split up from one another. So I've got Mandarin still looking like sword personnel going through, making his way towards Iceman. I've got Danny using the narrow hallways and the ventilation shafts. Now, one way they can do this is meeting up with Iceman. He's not, Bobby's still Bobby. Powerful as he is, he's still Bobby. So Mandarin can go at him from trying to use, again, the Mento ring and get into his mind and project the illusions. And from what I do know, and even though Bobby, whether in ice form or not, still has full use of all of his senses, and the rings are powerful enough to affect all five senses of the person. He can confuse him, put up like 50 Mandarins in the room. Bobby still got to like fire ice at each one. Right behind him comes Iron Fist with a huge fully charged chi punch, knocking the crap out of Bobby, and Bobby's unconscious. Mandarin could also blind Bobby by the white light ring, basically just stopping him from getting a a full-on pinpointed attack on either opponent, and Mandarin and Iron Fist just pummeled him to death. Mandarin is also, I mean, he's honed his body to where he is strong enough to go toe-to-toe with an ironed, with a fully armored Iron Man without feeling any effects or anything. He beat Iron Man in hand-to-hand, so punching the crap out of Solid Ice won't be a big deal. Plus, he's a martial arts guy, and those guys break ice all the time. Mandarin was probably breaking ice when he was like 5, so. Now, I also think that Bobby can't fully cut loose in the station, number one, because it is a space station, and if he drops the temperature too low or affects too much of the machinery, you could have malfunctions, whether it's life support or just damage the station's whole integrity even further, putting the rest of the crew at risk. And again, Bobby's an X-Men. He's a bleeding heart, and deep down, he's a softy. He's not going to go that route and endanger the SWORD crew and regular personnel, you know, the plumber guy that fixes the SWORD toilets, just to win a match. So he's gonna moderately use his powers. He's not gonna like drop temperatures to, you know, sub 30 degrees inside, knowing that the, you know, SWORD personnel, it would probably kill them, being that they don't have the regular gear to sustain that type of weather in the environment. Now, I know it's a space station. Maybe the guys outside are like retrofitted for that type while they're working on the station. But I do think Mandarin has more than enough power in his rings, and backed up by the Iron Fist, that just gives him the icing on the cake here to put Bobby down. So I will hand it off to Tom.
Okay. Well, we had some similarities in our rationales. I do think they're going to split up, but it's because for one thing, when Mandarin appears, his rings are alien technology, which is what SWORD is after, what SWORD, you know, specializes in. So they're well known to SWORD's files. Their appearance on the station will immediately set off alarms, and security systems will kick into gear. So Mandarin's going to be busy with security systems. Iron Fist, though, can take off and go after Iceman. So I see them separating, but for different reasons than you were saying. As in terms of Bobby, he's going to once again head down and look. Now, I was looking through just refreshing, seeing what his current power set is. And one thing they point out was he has thermal vision. So he's able to basically pick out people based on their heat signature. So he's going to be able to see Iron Fist coming. Iron Fist will be able to is really good at stealth, but he's going to be at a bit of a disadvantage because of Bobby. Bobby also is, you're right, he's not going to, say, try to freeze the entire station, but he does have very specific control of his powers. And he has absolute control of water vapor. So he's going to be able to pull in water vapor to bulk himself up. Change to his organic ice form means that being shattered, he can still reform. So he's going to be pretty much impossible to knock out in his organic ice form, because he's going to be able to reform his body even if it's shattered. And then interesting thing I thought of is once he confronts Iron Fist, Iron Fist is going to be able to punch through his ice, but he's going to be able to, the Iceman will be able to slow him down by simply putting snowdrifts and ice blocks and ice spikes and so on in the way. And then kind of attacks at a subtle attack he can use is since he has absolute control of water vapor in the area, is actually you start freeze drying Iron Fist. So he's going to be able to pull moisture out of Iron Fist's body and start dehydrating him. And so while Iron Fist can compensate, there is going to be a physical limit at which his body is going to be essentially, you know, is going to be losing the water vapor in his body and start desiccating. And you know, how much can his focus on chi is going to distract him and reduce his efficiency in terms of physical battle.
Well, it won't distract him because Iron Fist can heal himself while, I mean, it's effortlessly. I mean, he's done it a couple of times.
Yeah, but it's still a distraction. He's not going to be able to fight and heal and prevent his body from shutting down from lack of water.
Actually, he has fought and healed himself before. When he was in hell fighting the demons, he was just fine. He was fighting at the same time and healing at the same time and charging his chi at the same time as well. I mean, and even if Bobby is occupied with Iron Fist, like I said, he's still got to contend with Mandarin. And the fact that he may be able to see thermal in, imaging or whatnot, but Mandarin can switch up and use the gravity ring and just pin Bobby to the ground and then switch over to the disintegration ring, which, I mean, even if he does, you know, form ice, disintegration is disintegration. I mean, if he disintegrates Bobby's arm, he'll just have to reform a new one, or Mandarin may even go for the kill, being that he's a jackass like that. He also has like the sonic blaster in his ring, which once that goes, Bobby's equilibrium is off, Bobby's targeting is off. It'll affect him the same way the Marauder Vertigo affected Bobby, and he was unable to concentrate hard enough to use his powers, and he actually reverted back to his human form. So
that was a while back, though. That was before the organic ice came into play, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, but the equilibrium, if that's pinpointed, that's it. I mean, that doesn't matter. That his organic ice powers didn't beef up his inner ear strength. You see what I'm saying? So, I mean, it's going to mess up his concentration, and he still will have to try to pinpoint which character is which. And also, Mandarin can use his ring to control Bobby's mind. You know, he did the sword personnel or whatnot, Mandarin can use his ring to do that and just throw Bobby completely off his game, giving Iron Fist an opening.
But that's assuming Mandarin makes it to them, because he's going to be contending with the security systems going after his rings.
Well, unless there's like a bling alarm. Once Mandarin appears on the sword station, I don't think it's going to be alarms blazing, because they've been contending with all these fights. They got to do they're still fixing the station. They've got to prioritize things anyway. And like I said, once they get to Mandarin, he'll just look like one of them, and his rings affect all five senses.
But the automated systems don't have human senses, so it's going to be. And there's also a bank of telepaths on the station, so they'll be able to pick him out, unless he's going to manage to control a bunch of the telepaths with his Mento ring, and then still project illusions and so on. The automated system should kick in, and remember, these are alien rings. I would consider that like top of the line, you know, the top level threat of alien technology. So
true,
I don't think
but
you're
also.
Going to, I don't think they're going to just allow alien technology to just run rampant on the station.
Yeah, but I mean, let's be real. Sword personnel is like the equivalent of like Cobra troops or Stormtroopers. They're just fodder. None of these guys are going to be able to contend with Mandarin anyway. He'll throw up the little Dark Force shield, and they won't be able to see him. He'll just continue walking, or he'll just beat them to a pulp as he walks through. Or, you know, like I said, he'll use the ring, dazzle them. They won't be a threat. I mean, the little personnel guys are seriously fodder. The real fight here is Bobby, Iron Fist, and Mandarin, and they're all gonna meet up. So, I mean,
There's another aspect of Bobby's powers, though, that he can take advantage of, which is he can essentially abandon his body and control it remotely while he changes to water vapor, and then he can just be inhaled by the two characters and then freeze their lungs.
Yeah, but he's not gonna kill. He's not gonna kill Danny or.
No,
Mandarin.
But knowing
but
if
though.
Danny's healing himself constantly, then he's going to be able to go in and just wreak havoc with his body and force Danny to keep healing himself. And you know, in the Mandarin's case, if he does encounter Mandarin, be able to be able to slip in undetected, because the Mento Intensifier Ring. As far as I know, it allows him to project thought, but it doesn't allow him to read minds, I don't think.
No. I don't think he can read minds, but he can
project. He would have to target Bobby, and if he's targeting an animated shell, he's not going to be able to control that. So Bobby's consciousness is actually floating around the air and be able to get around the ring.
Now, I know that he's got the paralysis ring, which can just paralyze the opponent. So if it's an empty shell and it doesn't react like a normal person would, then Mandarin would know that that's not the real Bobby.
But where is Bobby? How's he going to find them if he can't read his mind to detect it? How's he going to know where to focus his Mento Intensifier Ring?
Well, it's a sonic attack, and Bobby's mind would actually be a sonic entity at that point, so it would wreak havoc with Bobby, and he'd have to reform. He'd be in pain. But the thing is, though, how often do we see Bobby do this? I mean, like, that he can do it is just great, but I don't think he's going to go into Danny's lungs and freeze them, nor will he kill Mandarin. I mean, he's just not a killer.
No, he's not a killer, but he has gone to extremes in incapacitating people, though. And so I think he's going to be able to do his own deception by, you know, animating multiple bodies, throwing up blockades. I mean, Danny's not invincible. He is a lot stronger than he used to be, but I don't think he's invulnerable. And Iceman has a lot of attacks, and he's going to be difficult to just put down.
Well, if he can't see from the light burst, or if he's pinned down by the gravity, or Bobby doesn't know who to attack, or Mandarin is the type of guy who would use sword personnel under the influence of the rings as kind of like shields or to get in the way and really throw Bobby off his game, leaving him open to another chi blast attack from Danny. So, I mean, he's not going to freeze the sword guys into blocks of ice. He's not going to use his powers, you know, to stop them.
No, but he has more focus than that. He's not going to attack. He's not going to harm the sword people. He's got better control of his powers than that.
You know, in any block of ice he puts up, Mandarin will be able to, like, he can either use the impact beams to either, you know, break Bobby up or knock out the force walls, knock out the ice blocks. So, I mean, I'm just not, I don't know. It's just me. I also think that Bobby.
It's a difficult fight for Bobby. I'll admit to that. But it's, I think he can, I think there are ways he can come up.
Well, Bobby in his ice form is a great conductor of electricity. Am I right? And Mandarin does have an electricity ring.
So he can conduct it back to shock both of them.
Well, no, there's no feedback on the ring. It would just shock the hell out of Bobby. Maybe just leave him a little wounded puddle on the ground in those tidy whiteies. Oh, no, he doesn't wear those anymore. He's actually a big boy now. He wears big boy jeans. Yeah, but I mean, even if he sees in thermal vision, once your retinas or whatnot are just burnt up a little bit from the white light, Bobby won't be able to see anything. Yeah, but he'll be taken control of mentally by the Mandarin and the rings. I don't even know why I put Iron Fist in here. It would, as I think about it now, it could just be Mandarin beating the crap out of Bobby. He's got the 10 rings, and through all the combinations and through all of like Bobby's vaunted power, Iron Fist kind of like tips the scales. But Mandarin could probably do this on his own because he is that ruthless and very intelligent, hard to kill killer. I mean, the guy survived as just a head. You know, he's been in the frozen depths of the mountains with no shirt, just a loin cloth in the, you know, just fighting hand to hand with enemies. And like I said, I think this environment kind of limits Bobby from cutting loose to, you know, really do some damage with his abilities. Had it not been the sword station, I may even lean Bobby, but there's too many innocents at risk here, and the integrity of the station is at risk, especially when you want to involve low temperature icing inside of a space station.
Space is near absolute zero, so he's going to. So it's built pretty ruggedly, and
right. The outside is, but
they'll be able to evacuate and seal off areas that he damages.
But you also have to take into account.
I think he'd be willing to allow a certain amount of damage, but you're right. He's not going to ice over the whole station or.
Well, right, a certain amount. But I mean, let's take into account the prison break. All the fights we've currently had in the station, whole integrity is pretty much shot now. You got people rethinking their job choice. They're like, damn, I should have worked for the CIA instead of S.W.O.R.D. But, I mean, whole integrity on the outside, yes, is built to withstand those temperatures and whatnot, and is built to take those beatings. The inner hull of the space station isn't built like that, and it won't be able to hold up to those low temperatures repeatedly from Bobby. So, you know, I'm not saying he's not going to put up a fight here, but it won't be full potential maximum fight, Bobby. Like I said, with Mandarin messing with his mind and his abilities, and Iron Fist coming with the huge chi attacks left and right, Bobby doesn't stand a chance.
I see it in terms of Bobby can become intangible and basically hide in plain sight.
Well, if he becomes intangible, then Mandarin just uses the wind vortex ring and just swoops him up. And then if you mix the fire ring in the vortex ring, he's being caught up in a vortex full of fire. So that's going to suck for Bobby, who is Iceman. They don't play well together.
Yeah, but he does have control of the water vapor. So essentially, Mandarin's going to think he's got him and stop, and Bobby reforms somewhere else.
But he'll be weakened, and he'll be on his knees in tears, like, why did I take this fight? And then Iron Fist comes in with the multi-footed and fisted attack of the dragon, and that's it. Bobby's out, and we'll take him to sick bay.
Sick bay.
Every station has a sick bay.
Speech, have you seen Mandarin use his rings, like use more than one ring at a time at the same time?
Yes, he has.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've always known to be able to do multiple attacks, but I think Bobby has a lot of dimensions to his powers. I think he can keep squirming out of it and eventually find an opening, find some way to get through.
Some way, yes, just not against Iron Fist and Mandarin at the Peak Sword Station in this fight. He goes down. I'm sorry. Intangible, got the vortex to counteract that with the fire, and even the poison gas is null and void there. He'll just end up dropping S.W.O.R.D. personnel.
All right, well, we can,
I love the fire vortex. That's just cool. That just sounds awesome.
And you I was waiting for you to use the fire ring. I was wondering when you bring that one up.
Hey, the guy's got ten rings with multiple things. I got to remember them all. It's like, oh.
You can tell that we're getting down to the end of this competition because the rationales are, they're getting tighter. You know what I mean? Like they're getting more and more intense. More like looking more and more like a real comic book battle. Every fight we get closer to the end. That's for sure. All right. Well, thanks guys for a couple of great rationales, helping us close out our second season on COC Live here.
All right. So it's important for listeners and managers to understand the circumstances under which these fighters can compete. The fighters are teleported into their respective environment, this case, the Peak Station, on opposite ends of the environment. The fighters have full disposal of any and all the resources available in this environment. Fighters are not allowed to leave the environment, but teleportation and flyers are not considered as leaving the environment. Lastly, the winner shall be determined based on the fact that he or she has subdued the opponent's fighter. Subduing can be anything from restraining to killing. Next week, we are joined by COC Live Season 1 co-champion Infinite Speech, versus Eli, the COC All-Star, Anthony. And Speech will be choosing the environment as the home team.
Finally, I haven't chosen an environment in like 3 fights.
There you go, buddy.
I wonder if the Peak Station will still be around.
It won't do you any good. You're going down either way.
You're an ass.
I think after this fight, I think I have to come up with a new environment after this fight. I think. I might even be one fight late now that I think about it.
We were supposed to get an environment change.
Were we?
Yeah, we were. You said about 2 weeks ago that the next week you'd have a new environment.
Ooh, yeah, I think you might be right.
Suspect.
Go Baxter Building, huh? Cool. Just throwing that out there.
Okay.
Galactus' spaceship. Be a race for the ultimate nullifier.
Peter Parker's old house in Queens.
No, that'll be next season's COC. The Galactus ship.
The Watcher's house on the blue area of the moon.
Yeah, we've been there before.
It's been a while, though.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. So this season, we introduced a new segment to our show called the COC Power Rankings.
Power Rankings!
I'm glad you do that, because I wouldn't.
Good invitation, Jeff, by the way.
Who did that?
No, who did what?
Nothing.
We're Jeff and myself, and tonight it's Eli and myself, take it upon ourselves to rank 5 new characters each week in terms of who is the toughest. If you'd like to submit a character to be ranked or just want to yell at us for how ridiculous our choices are, log in at comicattackformer.com and tell us what you think in the COC thread labeled Power Rankings. Tonight's 5 nominees, when I was coming up with these 5 people, I was looking for I guess I was looking for kind of a pathetic theme, you know what I mean? Like, it mostly came along because there's one character on this list that keeps coming up over and over and over. I think Jackson actually keeps bringing him up because he thinks he's particularly pathetic. So tonight's 5 nominees are Forge, X-Men, Dr. Nemesis, Wong, who is Dr. Strange's manservant, I suppose you could say. Puck from Alpha Flight, and Danny Moonstar. And this is another area, too. This section of the show, too, is another one of those sections where Jeff had all this feedback and commentary and expectations and instructions and lists and things like that of what he wanted to happen. So I went into the script where he typed everything in. I just erased it all. It's like, who is this guy? Who's Jeff? You know? Is it Valkyrie? Then I'll put her here. If she's not a Valkyrie, I'll put her there. You know, like, what the hell are you talking about?
That's just what you get for leaving us, Jeff.
No, I know. And it's current 616, man. What do you mean if she's a Valkyrie? He reads the books. He knows what she is and what she is.
I don't.
You don't know me neither. I just
never keep her, Danny.
No. You know what? Strangely enough, I actually prefer her now that she's depowered. I prefer her character now as opposed to when she was powered. I don't know why. There's certain characters that are just more interesting.
Does she have any powers?
She has her Valkyrie powers, but she doesn't run around as a Valkyrie. I don't know. Does that make sense? Like, when Hela or somebody like that needs her, or there's some kind of Asgardian thing that goes on, then, you know, boom, she's Valkyrie again. But just on a day-to-day basis, inner stuff, she's not. At least that's my take on Danny Moonstar.
What's her power with the, I don't see it on here, what's her power with the Valkyrie power?
She's got the flying horse, she's got accelerated strength, she has some mystical sword, too, that...
She has everything Percy has had on Clash of the Titans.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's true.
Pretty
right?
much.
Yeah. She's kind of got Hela in her back pocket, and she can go through different realms. She can fly through different realms and stuff like that. But we've seen that when it's not an Asgardian crisis, she doesn't have any of those powers, and she's completely depowered. You know, peak physical human strength, all that peak stuff, right? So Jeff also gave us his rankings, but I say we just skip them.
Why not?
Skip Jeff.
Yeah.
Pretend like he's not even here.
Jeff's gonna love the way he hears this one. Just every other word.
Well, you know, should we throw him one bone?
Hey, you know, he just Skyped me again, and he says, "Are they done yet?" And I'm serious. He just keeps Skyping me over and over and over. He's like, "Are they done? What are they doing? Where are they now? Do you miss me?" Things like that. So,
oh my goodness.
Saturday.
Yeah, Jeff, you might be losing, about how Jeff. You, are.
You know what I love the most is I love the fact that we're going to finish recording the show and then we're going to turn it over to him to edit.
Yeah.
Take all the work.
So you just trash talk him and he'll have to edit it in.
Get editing, sucker. Okay, so because I talked for so long there, let me say the nominees one more time for you guys. It was Forge, Dr. Nemesis, Wong, Puck, and Danny Moonstar. Eli, do you want to go first or do you want me to?
I'll go first.
Okay.
I don't know much about any of these characters, so I had to look them up, and so my rankings might be, you know, you all might think I'm being especially stupid this week, but the only thing I know about any of these characters really is about Puck. The last time I read anything about him was in Warlock and the Infinity Watch, which,
oh my God,
20 years ago. Yeah, yeah. So. First, I have Moonstar, because she's supposed to be really bad with her Valkyrie powers or whatever, and I have no clue what her former powers used to be before M-Day, but I got her number one. I got Puck number two, because he seems to be pretty bad, bouncing all over the place. I think he could probably take out whoever else is below him on this list if you were just drop them in front of each other. Puck would get to bouncing, and it would be game over. Then I got Wong. I have to laugh every time I say his name. I'm sorry, but
racist.
How are you racist?
See, you filled Jeff's shoes well.
Oh, shut up!
You're a hate monger.
Shut
up,
Johnson.
Guy. You're that guy.
It only depends on what color his clothes are. So I thought Wong was just a manservant, you know, just strange little do-boy, but. He's got some skills, yeah. And I'm sure he's picked up a few mystical things from Strange over the years. Yeah. So, you know, I mean,
that's why he's so uppity.
Yeah, he's the manservant of the Sorcerer Supreme. He's an elitist.
He's the one. Hey,
that's why he probably doesn't get invited to the Butler conventions anymore. Jarvis and Alfred are chilling, and they just leave him out. But you know, Wong, maybe he could even go up and replace Puck. I don't know how much mystical stuff he has, but he's there at number three. Then Dr. Nemesis. He seems, he's lame. I don't really like him, but he seems a little bit more capable to me than Forge. Unless you drop maybe Forge into his lab to whip up some invention and gave him some time, then he could probably take out, do better, but just him by himself, nah, Forge is his last. So that's it for me. Moonstar, Puck, Wong, Dr. Nemesis, and Forge.
All right. Tom, what do you think?
Okay, I put Puck number one. And that's because he's got so much experience fighting, and he's not just a midget or a little person or whatever, a dwarf, but his body's actually compressed. He's high density. So he does have, so when he's bouncing, he's actually packs quite a punch, and he's got a lot of experience fighting, and he probably, among these guys, probably one of the best hand-to-hand fighters in the bunch. I put Dr. Nemesis second. I think he's pretty pathetic, but he does have the size-changing power, so he can grow or shrink, and probably not nearly as good as Hank Pym, but you know, he does have power. I put Forge third, and I'm thinking back to around 1990 or so, 1989, there was you had when Claremont first really lost it with X-Men, and he had like 2 years with no real X-Men team. It was just Forge and Banshee were teamed up, and Forge was pretty bad. I mean, when he gets into a battle mode, he usually has pretty equipped weapons that are pretty pretty well designed. I mean, it's like cutting edge stuff. And then he also is able to cannibalize his own robotic parts. He has like, you know, gotten into his leg, and he carries parts in his leg where he can assemble a weapon in seconds. So, and plus he served in Vietnam. They may have updated that now, but he does have combat skills. So I gave Forge some respect here. Danny Moonstar, I just don't know. You mentioned that she doesn't always have Valkyrie power, so I'm not sure how formidable she'd be without it. And I put Wong last, but I could be convinced. I remember Wong has stood alone before and done pretty well, so maybe I might move Wong up a slot or two. But I may not be giving him the respect he deserves.
No, that's good. It's a good list. Speech, how about you?
All right. I actually have Wong first, and that's I was one of those people who thought Wong was just a regular manservant who brought Doctor Strange his spells and Toad's eyes and warts and all that stuff. But I forgot what issue it was, but there was several books where just Wong was just like kicking ass and like he was pissed off at Doctor Strange and being uppity as usual. And Strange was reminding the Avengers, you know, around him that Wong is more than just his manservant, that he's a very capable fighter, but he's in that position like out of what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of like how Alfred is with the Waynes. So
yeah, well, he's like the protector when Doctor Strange is in his astral form and his body's unprotected. Wong's the one that protects him.
Yeah, so I mean, you got to think, how bad do you have to be able to protect the Sorcerer Supreme? Because he won't just have the regular cat burglar come to get him.
I'm afraid I might not be giving Wong enough respect, but I'd have to look more deeply into his power set and everything, or his, how good he really is. So I don't know for sure.
Yeah, but see, again, they don't ever showcase Wong a whole lot, like doing anything just fantastic to save Strange anyway. Second, I do have Puck because of what you said, Tom. He is basically a compressed little person. He's got the same amount of strength and everything, and the guy does pack quite a punch. Moonstar, I just figure her as a capable fighter because, like you said, I think it was Eli, or no, it was Ian. If there's not a huge crisis going on to where she doesn't have to pull out the Asgardian, where she's not pulling it out. So basically, she's just regular Danny and she can fight well. Dr. Nemesis, he'd rather operate on you and shoot his gun. And I'm actually skipping 8 or 9 more paces, and then I'll put Forge on the list. Because isn't Forge still out of his mind right now, or is he... Because the last time I saw any focus on Forge was around Ghost Boxes. And he was just out of his mind and so not capable of even, like, wiping his own ass. And so, like, is he still...
I was thinking Boxes when it's insane. Forge is insane.
Yeah, so I mean, if Forge has time, you know, but if you just drop Forge in a fight with somebody... Yeah, he may be able to hold his own for a couple seconds, but I mean, I don't think against any of these guys, he'd be formidable. Actually, I do think Dr. Nemesis will get him. So, that's my list.
All right, good. my list, not too much different than yours. Most of your lists, I put Moonstar, I put Danny first. The main reason why I put her first is because I draw a real comparison to her to somebody right now, and I think this isn't coincidental. I think the writers are going for this personally. I see her, she's a lot like Storm when Storm was depowered, and Storm, I think personally, did some of her best work when she was depowered. That's when she became leader of the X-Men. She took out Cyclops. That's when she became leader of the Morlocks, when she took out Callisto. She was just, you know, it made her more dangerous than ever. I think they're going for that with her right now. On Cannonball, in almost the exact same format that Danny Cyclops to take the leadership of the New Mutants. So I think, I think she's pretty tough. Now, Puck might be able to take her. I think it's kind of a toss-up for that. I'm not really sure. So I put Moonstone first. I put Wong as second, and I put Wong as second because of all the reasons that everybody says here. I see him as more of a pacifist, sitting in the back, you know, wouldn't really do a whole lot of fighting if he didn't have to, that kind of thing. But at the same time, you know, I have seen him use some spells. I'm sure he's got some martial arts with him, you know, all that good stuff. Puck third for all the reasons that everybody said. He's a tough little guy, and an excellent hand-to-hand fighter, really excellent hand-to-hand fighter. Could go anywhere on this list, pretty much.
Hasn't he fought Wolverine hand-to-hand before and won?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he's a great hand-to-hand fighter. Then I put Dr. Nemesis, who I think is cool and he's witty. I love when he speaks. But in terms of an action hero, I don't think so. And then I put Forge at the bottom. I liked Forge in the 80s. I liked his character, but there's no question about it. Man, he was pathetic. Like, he was really, really, really pathetic, especially when he was pining over Storm and that whole Storm stuff.
Oh, God.
That was just... Wasn't that
during Fall of Mutants?
Yeah, somewhere around there. They had
the two life-death stories where the two of them... where he finally gave Storm back her powers and so on.
Yeah, it was just... That was... I remember that was almost hard to read. Like, it was so bad. Okay, I'm just doing the math here. And then Wong. So Wong is 5, 9, 12, 14, 15. That's exciting radio right there. Are you listening to me count? okay, so according to our numeric rankings, and this is factoring in Jeff's picks as well, Moonstone...
Because my picks are the only picks that count.
Uh-oh. He's here.
Good Lord.
I've been listening for like 20 minutes.
Don't let him fool you.
You're creepy Uncle Jeff now. That's just staring
yes.
at the window. Just staring
yes.
at the window.
Stalking us.
Yeah, that's a bit...
I'm no longer the only creepy uncle.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Creepy Father Jeff.
Oh, that's even worse.
That is worse.
Okay, sorry, Ian. Go ahead.
Well, that's okay. So Danny Moonstar came up on top with 20 points for the best of the numeric rankings. Puck second with 17 points. Wong third with 15. Nemesis with 13. And Forge with 7.
So were you counting Danny as a Valkyrie or no?
We had her kind of teetering on both. You know what I mean? Like, so... Because it seems like she can pull the Valkyrie powers out when she needs it, but I was saying it almost seems like you only ever see it when it's an Asgardian problem. When it's not an Asgardian problem, you don't see the Valkyrie stuff. So
right.
So yeah, we had her kind of both. So yeah, and also with this pathetic five, personally, I think these guys could go below Nico.
Oh, wow.
Ouch.
That's low.
Yeah, I don't...
That's pretty low. That's pretty low.
I don't think they could take down Punisher. I don't think they could take down Blob. I don't think they could take down Lizard. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree with that.
So I think we have some new
base. You don't
think
Puck could take out Punisher?
I don't know. I think it'd be close. I think it'd be a good fight. Yeah, I don't know.
He's a small target.
Yeah, I mean, and you'd have to give Forge like, you know, half an hour to get out of his stupor, and then another 45 minutes to you know sober up, and then another 15 seconds to whip up a weapon, and then by that time Punisher's already got him dead bang. It's a wrap.
All Punisher has to do is show Forge a picture of Danny making out with Nate Gray, and he'd break down the floor weeping uncontrollably.
He used to be such a great character, too.
He was okay, yeah. I kind of liked him. He was a bit of a wild card, right? Yeah. And then when he redesigned his leg and stuff like that, I always thought that was kind of cool.
I mean, I've seen him take his leg apart and build weapons out of it, so...
Yeah.
I hate Forge.
Well, I thought he was making a comeback there in the new X-Men when he with the whole Nimrod thing. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
So I thought he was making a comeback there. They brought him in briefly, and then that was it. He was out.
Yeah, he just sucks. I'd put him at the bottom of the list.
Yeah, I don't hear any writer like, man, I want to get on a Forge book.
Yeah, he's technically dead right now.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, he was in that Warren Ellis Astonishing X-Men thing and with the Ghost Box thing and I don't know, it was somewhere around there that he was in Astonishing X-Men, and they found out that he was crazy, and so they ended up killing him off.
Oh, I didn't remember that. I wouldn't have put him on the list.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, that's why he should be at the bottom of the list, I think.
So. He's a waste either way, whether he was alive or dead. It's like, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, pretty much.
He'll
so
be brought
finally
back.
Somebody dethroned Nico at the bottom of the list.
Yeah.
All right, so Eli. What, oh, sorry, Jeff.
Well, I was gonna say what else did I miss? Good things?
Well, you know what? You know what you missed? That I have never, Jeff, in my life seen more people say nice things about you than this episode.
Wow. That must be the complete opposite.
No. It was a real lovin'. It was like you could see you were missed. You're an essential cog in this podcast.
See, that's
people...
why I felt like I had to be on the show. Yeah. I was feeling the love across the something and felt like I needed to call in. So
yeah. We were feeling some kind of love during that your rationale for Sue there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's how it would happen.
What was up with that?
How it would happen.
That is not how it would happen.
Yes, it would. What are you complaining about? She won.
I know, but you're soft core porning it up over there with.
You did. It was like
yeah,
in the background.
Like,
I could hear
the swelling in his loins and.
Yeah, you could hear the 70s porn theme in the background.
Yeah. Hey, Jeff, when I read it, I might have added a few parts.
Oh, man, I can't wait to hear that.
You had to make sure his children were on the other side of the house.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
I changed my voice and everything.
Oh, okay. Very nice.
It was very romantic.
Oh, my God. Who knew that Sue Storm would win with the Ron Jeremy special?
Stop it! Stop that! Sue is a
respectable lady,
woman in the Marvel universe.
Wasn't she wearing a costume with spikes and the hollowed out four and
yes,
the hooker boots?
That was Malice, and you'll see Malice later on in the competition.
Yeah, but see, there was a time when Sue was not Malice, and she still wore the hollowed out four and was showing off Bleach Town.
Well, you know, she had to try and do something to get Reed out of the lab, you know?
Yeah, I guess. It didn't work.
No, it didn't work, so. But, and she's still faithful to him. She is above reproach, so stop it.
Unless Namor's around.
Quit it.
Yeah, true.
No, she never caved to Namor.
Okay.
Yeah, right. <That's>
Ah, jeez.
And didn't she marry Dr. Doom at one point?
Everybody's married Dr. Doom at one point.
All right, quit it. You guys are killing my image of
Dr. Doom is really the whore of the Marvel Universe.
So no, it's not Tony and Sue and Emma?
And Emma.
Well, yeah, her too.
There's a lot of whores in the Marvel. Wolverine's over 100. You got to give him, you know, the benefit of the doubt.
All right, so to take him out. So what, Emma and Tony? That's the real Avengers versus X-Men.
Comparing bedpost matches.
Avengers sexes X-Men.
Oh, my goodness.
And that will be the title of the new porn.
The new porn, exactly, right. Right.
Oh, gosh.
Gosh, wow. Clergyman, you're just something else, man.
Yeah.
Hey, did you guys talk last week about Alan Moore?
Yeah.
And didn't he give you guys, like, leg cramps at the same moment?
He did.
I got one this week.
Really?
Just a few minutes ago.
See, there's something about doing the show, recording the show.
Alan Moore has cursed you guys.
He's gotten pissed off.
Yeah, he doesn't mess with me, though, because he knows what's going to happen.
Well, maybe he made you pass out, and that's why you had to go to the hospital.
Don't say that speech, because I said that last week, and this week I got a leg cramp.
Well, it took a lot of physical exertion for that to happen. I'd hit Moore so hard, all the hair would fall off his face.
And see, he has respect for Tom, and so he just sends Tom lovely ladies on his boat. That's
what it is.
Actually, he gave Tom the gift of immortality so he can finish reading all those damn books.
And we did mention in Moore in the intro. Right, we did mention the Watchmen reference. So
yes, we did, and I'm on page 3. So
maybe if we don't mention him or anything that has anything to do with him, you know, he won't pick up on what we're doing. He'll leave us alone.
Well, no, I do think that he's the greatest writer of all time.
No, you don't.
I don't want any more voodoo stuff.
Is today backwards day?
I think sarcastically claiming he's your favorite writer of all time is going to get you messed up. You look for a leg cramp or leprosy coming your way sometime soon.
I'm going to drown or something after the podcast.
I do have a bad case of poison ivy. Does that count?
Yeah. Are you serious?
Yeah. Well, it's not really a bad case, but I do have poison ivy on my arms.
I've got it on my arms and legs.
How do you get poison ivy on your arms?
I don't know. I mowed the grass. Well, I mowed the grass, and I don't know. I just got it on my arms. I don't know.
Mowing the grass.
Yeah, it'll get aerosolized. Yeah, definitely don't breathe it in. The worst thing you do is burn poison ivy and inhale the smoke. That'll destroy it. Oh, gosh.
That will mess
up.
So you were mowing poison ivy?
I was mowing and around poison ivy.
My God.
Yeah, I know.
You know, seriously, man, you Americans are so stupid.
No, it's just the Georgians.
Jeff, so invisible beings cast a shadow?
Yeah, what's up with that?
Yeah.
I know they make footprints. But they make footprints. But
Jeff, a shadow is the absence of light. If she's invisible, light is passing through her.
Didn't you hear the part about where Nightcrawler kissed her?
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with...
No, it doesn't. It has
nothing to do with...
And I don't want him kissing her either.
That's a little sleight of hand there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, look over here.
Now's the time where we wrap up the show.
Uh-huh.
This was fun.
So, thanks for listening to episode 36 of COC Live.
Oh, sorry, that's 37.
Oh, 37.
Wait. Yeah, I'm sorry. Thanks for listening to episode 37 of COC Live. Well, we're getting up there.
Rookie.
Go to comicattack.forumer.com under COC to vote for who you think is most deserving to win tonight's fight. If you have any questions that you would like answered on the show, add them to the Ask the COCers thread on the forum. We would love to see millions of people arguing the fights in the forum, so feel free to post in the fight thread. Also, look for us on Twitter at COC Podcast, like Contest of Champions on Facebook, subscribe in iTunes, and write us a review. And check out our newest affiliate, ComicRelated.com, who will be posting Contest of Champions from here on out, along with some other great podcasts like Tales from the Water Cooler and the Discussions with Decapitated Dan.
And now we have a thread in the ComicRelated.com forums, and you can go and add any comments that you want there, and you can ask any questions to us there. There's an Ask the COCers thread on that forum too.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, and we record every Sunday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern time, so be sure to get your votes in before then. After some top-notch editing work by Jeff, the fight's posted and ready for listening the following Tuesday. This week
might be a little bit late.
This week will be late?
Yeah, it'll probably be late. But
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, I think your editing's going to be tricky this week.
Yeah, we left a few choice things there.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Jeez. This is an important announcement here. Next week, July 8th, we are all taking the week off, but we'll be back the following week, July 15th, with Eli and Infinite Speech. Thanks again to our great competitors, Tom and Infinite Speech, and thanks to my co-host, Eli, and my part-time co-host, Jeff. But most of all, thanks to the listeners out there. For all of us at COC, have a great couple of weeks, and we'll see you back again on the 15th.
See ya. Pet it.
Good night.
Good night.
Go for the double team.
Let's get ready to rumble!
What kind of fantasy were you living with your thing with Sue, man? Unless Ian just invented all that. You do that again, and I'm going to have to pay you a visit.
I don't know. I really don't know what he said. The only thing that I wrote was that Kurt teleported within the force field and gave her a kiss and vamped her around.
There was pressing of bodies against each other. There was
kissing. There was
Ian Johnson, I freaking love you. That's great. I just love that. I love that you did that.
What is Kurt's two-toed attack? What is that? What is that? That was creepy, man.
Oh, that's good. Oh, I can't wait to hear that.